Okay, so we are continuing with our 10 fields of Zen tonight. And tonight, the topic is precepts. And as most of you are well aware, the precepts are the moral guidelines of our practice. And we study them every year for about 2.5 months. So there are we study the refuges and the karmaverse and the three pure precepts, and then there are 10 grave precepts. So and we spend a class on each one of those. So we talk about them a lot. So tonight I figured we would approach it a little bit differently. Just out of curiosity, anyone here, and please don't be shy about admitting it. If you don't really know what we're talking about when we say precepts, or you don't know what our precepts are. Valka? All right. I'm gonna guess there's a couple more of you out there. So let's see. Maybe our host can find, actually, I mean, it's in the chant book. So let's, yeah, go ahead and hand out the chant books. So if you put the chant link to the chant book in the chat, and then if the precepts are on page 27. So we have, it's kind of funny because we call them the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, but it's like, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. Those are three precepts. And then we have the three pure precepts: cease from evil, release all self-attachment, do only good, take selfless action, do good for others, embrace all things and conditions. And then we have the 10 grave precepts: do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. Do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. Do not misuse sexuality, remain faithful in relationships. Do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. Do not become intoxicated, polish clarity, dispel delusion. Do not dwell on past mistakes, create wisdom from ignorance. Do not praise self or blame others. Maintain modesty and extol virtue. Do not be mean with dharma or wealth. Share understanding. Give freely of self. Do not indulge anger. Cultivate equanimity. And do not defame the three treasures. Respect the Buddha. Unfold the dharma and nourish the Sangha. So there are many levels to each of the precepts. There is the just kind of most literal, basic physical level of primarily do not kill, primarily do not kill other people. But we can expand that perhaps to do not kill, minimize our killing of other living creatures to whatever extent we can. But then we get more subtle into can we kill, for instance, somebody's enthusiasm, or kind of kill ideas, or kill by cutting things off and rejecting them, even parts of ourselves. So, get down to pretty subtle levels. So obviously the precepts, one of the functions is to give us some guidelines for living our life so that we aren't making a karmic mess as we go. The idea being that kind of the original Buddhist idea is that this is a prerequisite to live in this way, is a prerequisite for spiritual practice. If you don't, do your best to follow these, you're probably not going to have a nice calm mind when you sit down. I always think about that, like if you're stealing and cheating and lying, you're probably going to be sitting there thinking about like not getting caught and all of that stuff, right? Or if you're indulging anger and you're creating all kinds of conflict and tumult in your relationships, that's going to be agitating to your practice and to your follow these rules as best you can. But then we also talk about them as being, they describe the enlightened behavior of a Buddha. So if we really were enlightened and free of self-attachment, this would describe our behavior. So in some ways, it's not just about kind of reining in our karma, it's about learning how to live like a Buddha. And another aspect of them, there are many, is they are tools for self-study. So that's what I was going to concentrate on tonight. As Dogen says in Genjo Koan, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. So if we, the idea being that before we can kind of transcend the self and everything, we have to actually study the self and become familiar with it at many different levels, our kind of our personality, our karma, what it means to be this being, but then also at a more of a existential level, right? Like what is the nature of self? Self is impermanent and empty. Can we explore that? So what I figured we'd do is go into small groups for a little bit, and each group will have a different grave precept and answer the question, and so have a scribe for each group so that you can bring it back. So if you have the precept, do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. So the question would be, what are at least three things you can learn about the self, right, from do not kill? And maybe three things you can learn about the self from cultivate and encourage life. Right? So kind of that, the two different aspects. So that we're not only dwelling on kind of the negative aspects in a way, like it's not about, not only about like, okay, well, what can you learn about the self from do not steal, right? Like, I learned that, I really want stuff, right? I really have strong desire. But then, what can we learn about the self from trying to honor the gift not yet given? So let's see. Yes. And so Tyler's our host, right? So if we need 10 groups, and we can do one, two, like
nine of us, so we continue
three
three groups of
groups. We can do three groups here. So I don't know, what would seven groups?
Yeah, seven groups of three. Sure.
Would that work?
Well, I guess we're one of one.
They could do six.
Two.
Okay.
You could do six. So go ahead and do six, and let's see.
Give a praise.
And there's hey,
today.
yeah, well, whatever one we don't get to, we'll all discuss. So
yeah.
How about then? So each of the breakout rooms will have a number, correct? And so hopefully when you are accepting your invitation to your breakout room, do you
Sorry, you froze up there for a second. Like,
if can you like are the rooms ready to go?
oh yes, the rooms are ready to go. Yeah.
Okay, so who's somebody from group one? Just one of the people from group one.
Karen.
Who is that?
Karen.
Karen. So Karen, your group will have do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. Okay, somebody from group two.
Gavel.
Gathel, it's do not steal, honor the gift not yet given.
John is from group three.
John, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay. Do not misuse sexuality, remain faithful in relationships.
Four, Coral hopped online, so we'll throw.
All right, Coral, your group will have do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. Five.
Gene.
Five. You will have do not become intoxicated, polish clarity, dispel delusion. And then six.
Brian.
Brian, your group will have do not dwell on past mistakes, create wisdom from ignorance. And then we'll divvy up the rest of them in this in the dirt center. So how about how long do people want? 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 10?
10 is fine. 10 minutes.
All right. 10, yeah. So once they're in the group, you can do 10.
Beautiful.
All right, thank you. Okay, so I look forward to hearing from the scribe from group one on yeah.
Okay, so ours was do not kill.
Oops.
Oh.
Right, sorry, we hadn't turned your speaker back on. Go ahead.
You can hear me though, right? Okay. So ours was do not kill. And we started our conversation by asking, there's three of us, by asking if we were vegetarian or not. So a lot of our conversation kind of centered around if we were vegetarian. And so as far as the three things that we have learned about ourselves in an attempt to be vegetarian, is that sometimes it can have physiological limitations where one person in the group has a desire to be vegetarian and has tried it on several occasions, but has run into some health problems without having animal protein in the diet. And another person has a desire to be vegetarian, but is in a family setting with children, and it's difficult to get them to eat any, vegetarian meals. So that's we kind of looked at it as a waste of like honoring nature, where it's kind of a waste of the food that's prepared if the kids won't eat it. And then we went on to talking about if we, for that person cooking for the family, if the food that the animal protein that is prepared, they try to buy, honor the earth by buying sustainably raised animals. And then we kind of talked a little bit about the difference between the time of Buddha and modern day as far as dealing with things like, oh, those hornets, those, I can't remember what they're called right now, those huge hornets, the killer hornets and rats and just different pests that are potentially can kill us, and how we balance that. And we all three of us felt like it was okay to exterminate those. And then we just right we were questioning, and none of us knew the discussion about this or knew enough to discuss it, what the Buddha said about self-defense in relationship to, is it okay to kill somebody in self-defense, or if you're if you are protecting your children or family. That's it.
Cool. Well, thank you. All right. Do not steal, cultivate knowing. Do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. Leah.
That wasn't mine. I was just doing something
Oh.
with my hand.
Oh, I see. Well, who is the scribe for that one?
Okay, thank goodness, because I just got afraid that my group accidentally duplicated another group, and we were going to have a really long discussion about stealing. But yes, the group I was in talked about this precept, and some thoughts about things we could learn about the self from Do Not Steal are, doing some personal reflection of, are you greedy? Or, are you the kind of person who will go to extremes to acquire things? We talked about how do not steal implies that permission must be given in order for you to have or take something. And we talked about this concept, holding no thought of gain, which means, well, I guess I don't know what it means, but made us think about how attaching to objects or outcomes could be unhealthy or unskillful. So kind of going back to something that I've heard talked about a lot in Zen teaching of non-attachment. And then in terms of honoring the gift not yet given, we talked about how we can learn about one's propensity for impatience if we struggle to wait for the gift that is not yet given. This phrase also might seem to imply that generosity should be the norm, like if you need, the gift should be given. And then we talk about how the word honor implies some sort of social contract or relationship between the gift giver and the gift receiver.
Thank you. All right, do not misuse sexuality. Remain faithful in relationships.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Talked about social media attracting us using sexuality, anything from good-looking humans to comic jokes to whatever, and basically pulling us in, and how much do we let that happen, and how much is that misusing or even not being faithful in relationships, things like that. We talked about thoughts versus actions. How much are we violating the precepts if it's just thoughts versus actions? Different levels, but how bad are thoughts? The precept talks about having a veneer of attachment. That's sort of like a, lying in a way, but you can also be very unconditionally loving and all that kind of stuff toward people and cross a line just because you're not listening to how that affects other people. So you can actually even unintentionally cross lines and things like that. Also, where can you go deeper with this precept if you're just practicing it, just thinking about what those boundaries are, where could you go deeper to follow the precept, and or where are you unaware that you're already crossing some boundaries and things like that. And then the last one might be pushing consensual partners toward new experiences, and whether that's okay or not, just edges of practice kind of stuff there.
Thank
I missed that.
you. Let's see. Then it's do not speak dishonestly.
Yes.
Yeah,
All right.
that was me and my group. And while the others in my group were very sensitive to how other people were feeling, they understood that it's a desire within themselves not to cause harm, inadvertently, or here, let me look at my notes, or being highly sensitive about other people's emotions. For me, it's just a really deep desire for of avoiding conflict, to the point where I'm like, in the moment, willing to lie about it. Like it's like a knee-jerk reaction. And that being really honest to the point where you feel like you're being really direct is a lot easier in a professional setting. The stakes are lower, and it's a pretty good chance that the person's not gonna react in an inappropriate way, and in a work setting. And whereas family is like really triggering, and it's just like sometimes you just can't go there with family. And let's see. There's this like energetic feeling to just speaking your truth. And that's, and it feels really good to follow intuition when it comes to following this precept, because you can cause harm by speaking truthfully, and you gotta have to like weigh those out. And it comes with a lot of experience, especially of like, you know, working with children and stuff like that. You tend to like gain an intuition of the balance between honesty and harm. And I also learned, this is just me in the group. Well, maybe others too, but I don't want to sign them up for this. But I find it really hard not to match another person's energy, so I will avoid like raising the energy level or upsetting somebody, because I find it hard not to just like leap right into the crazy as soon as someone gets like really upset or angry with me. And so like be very like tactful in my communications. Yeah.
Do not become intoxicated. Polish clarity, dispel delusion. Who is the scribe for that? Oh,
Yeah,
gee.
I'm the scribe for that.
All right.
And in terms of intoxicants, there's a good point made that there's different ways of being intoxicated, and that things that are very exciting or might feel good in the moment, but ultimately they can be a distraction and can cause harm to ourselves and others. And by reflecting on these things that cause these emotions or these thoughts in ourselves, if we think about them over some time, that can help us to polish the clarity and dispel the illusion. If indeed it is that, that can lead to harmful behaviors for ourselves and others. So ultimately, when we can see more clearly, then we can make better choices, more moral choices that contribute to our well-being and others' well-being. So that's all.
Thank you. Do not praise self or blame others.
Does not dwell on past mistakes.
Do not dwell on past mistakes. So is that the Brian's group?
Okay, I'll do it, Tyler. We didn't really have a scribe. Yeah, past mistakes. You can't change the past. It's beyond your control. So don't waste any time really trying to change it. The other part we thought was sometimes we embellish the past mistakes for no good reason. We just enjoy the dukkha of it. And not accepting the fact that it's beyond our control. And then we kind of dealt on the wisdom part or from it. Learn from our mistakes, you know, try to turn it into a lesson that can be used in a compassionate way to help other people, ourselves included. Forgiveness. For oneself and for others. Usually, when you look at what you've done wrong, there's you're usually hurting yourself still. Or and then finally, we kind of like in AA, make amends, which basically means make a list of all those you harmed and make amends to them. I mean, that's if you're going to do anything about the past, make amends for them, but not just throw them in people's faces. That's about it. Tyler, you got anything else?
Thank you. All right. Dirtsendo now. Yep.
Yeah. Do not praise self or blame others.
All right, I'm going to hand you this course.
Maintain modesty, extol virtue. We talked about when praising self or blaming others, the small self comes out. You know, like liking to boast about our accomplishments and blame others for our mistakes or difficulties. It's part of creating, and like it creates an in-group out-group mentality or divisiveness thinking, which is deeply harmful in our modern world and really difficult to unlearn. And I think small self could also be ego, and just that blaming, praising self and blaming others can be used to protect ego. And so when we're doing this, kind of look at where's our ego, how's our ego feeling? the maintain modesty, extol virtue. When thinking of it that way, it's kind of a, I'm not worried about my image. I'm okay right here. Seeing the best in others, it can help us see the best in others without judging, seeing that we are all people, we are all connected, and that intention is important. It's okay to be proud of yourself and others internally, but boasting looks like insecurity.
Thank you.
No, you're not being mean with Dharma.
You're not being mean with Dharma or wealth. Stay right in the standing, give freely yourself.
Okay. And I might have others join in my group because we were being a little unclear on who the scribe was. So this is a little confusing here. But don't be mean with Dharma or wealth. So first we're just talking about the, we thought the choice of the word mean was a little interesting. Talking about how that really may mean don't withhold Dharma or wealth. But we found that this, thinking about this precept can lead to self-awareness and how comfortable each of us is with cognitive dissonance. Allowing us to really look at ourselves and honesty. We discussed that by not being mean with Dharma or wealth, all of us were thinking about what we don't want to be. And we, each of us discussed how our fathers, all three of our fathers, or have been people who have been mean, especially with wealth. And so we it struck all of us on a real personal level of, wait, we don't want to be people who are hoarding. And
also the emotional withholding,
the emotion, yes,
so the emotional aspects of it,
emotional aspects,
the guarded, where it automatically makes you become more like that. They can hear me. I'm projected.
Can people hear?
My mind is on that mic.
Okay, did everyone hear Clark? No. Just add to it.
We were talking about the emotional withholding too, when you withhold of yourself, and the idea of how parents can sometimes shape their children to be like them without them really realizing it, and the shared experience that we had with that style of withholding, mm-hmm. which makes you afraid to really like present yourself and give up yourself freely. And the other thing that we brought up was I lost it.
Okay.
interconnectedness, empathy, commerce, fathers, setting.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get to that yet. But.
Willingness, opportunity to connect. Healing and life.
Do you want to join in later when I get to
that? Yeah,
go. Okay. So the next part, sharing, share understanding, give freely of self. Okay. We're reflecting on this gives the opportunity for us to connect with others, to relate to others, to build community. I was talking about the Buddhist concept of boundarylessness too. So if someone else is suffering, we're suffering. And so, I mean, I often find like right now we're seeing, you know, people don't have food. It just feels natural to want to give freely. because it's hard to just feel at ease when others are going without and don't have.
We're talking about the when other people are withholding, and the realization when you see it in other people, not necessarily as a judgment, but as a model for ways that you don't want to be as well. I always go back to the fact that all these precepts are completely impossible to not break as well. So there's always going to be a moment when, you know, maybe you're looking at yourself in the mirror being like, why am I practicing Buddhism? Like, what, why that withholding that comes with the never, there's no plateau, the realization that there's no plateau. And that can make it very difficult, I think, to fully give of yourself, because there's no real reward, end all reward at the end of the day. Jumping around a lot.
It's okay. And another thing we discussed with this last part of sharing understanding, giving freely of self, we discussed that when, for people that have maybe gone through a lot of suffering, it can force authenticity. Sometimes going through a lot of difficulty, it's hard to then operate on a real superficial level, and it can be easier to just share your deep truths and wanting to share that with others freely. Clark was also talking about sharing freely reminds us of how small we really are. Mm-hmm. Eric, is there anything you want to add?
Thank you. All right. Anger.
Yeah, it was a very common to do it. I like the interplay.
So, in terms of do not indulge anger, we talked a bit about how the family that you're raised in will kind of be your blueprint for how you approach anger. You know, if you grew up in a family where people get angry, then you think that that's normal. Or you know, if they're like shouting or whatever, you think that that's okay. And then when you get out in the real world, you realize that people don't like that. That's not a good way to act. And then conversely, if you grow up in a family where anger is very suppressed, then it can be actually hard to feel like it's even okay to feel anger, which can also be detrimental. So we talked about how anger doesn't necessarily need to be the part of ourselves that we act on, even though it's completely normal and human to feel it. It can also be something that we feel in self-defense when we feel scared in a situation. And sometimes we get angry just because we're angry at ourselves. So we project it out. But also anger can be information. It's telling you something about your experience. In terms of cultivating equanimity, just kind of flipping that, it's thinking, giving yourself permission to think there's a reason that I'm angry. So let me think about this. Why am I angry? And then one person suggested, you know, let yourself feel anger, but then drop it like a hot coal. Like you feel it and then you just let it go. And then, yeah, in terms of equanimity, just again, recognizing that anger is, it's part of the human experience, but doesn't have to be your operating base that you're operating from all the time.
Thank you. Yeah, lots of different topics I could have asked people to address. I mean, everybody, because we focus so much on precepts, you know, you only have to have been around for a year or two or whatever. And like, you know, it's a big part of our practice. And I think everybody has their experiences. I know for myself, I have felt kind of converted to the precepts gradually over time. Like, first take them and, for the most part, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. That sounds like a good way to live. Okay. And then, and some of them, just can feel like you can have, feel conviction about them. But over time, like, I think based on what happens in our life, we can end up just like learning that raw lesson that makes us go, oh, right. This is why I really don't. What, like, when I do this, the results are crappy, right? Then when I would do this, it really makes a mess. So, yeah, slowly but surely becoming converted to the precepts. And then, so we don't shortchange, do not defame the three treasures in the realm of the one holding no concept of ordinary beings and sages, is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. Respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma, nourish the Sangha. And this sounds kind of, I don't know, of all of them, perhaps the least accessible. The other ones, oh, that makes sense. Don't steal, you don't kill, whatever. But this sounds a little bit like, I don't know, like being kind of dogmatic or something. Like you should, if you're a Buddhist, you shouldn't criticize Buddhism. You should just accept everything. Fortunately, that's not how we hold it. I think, yeah, interesting how different people might have interpreted it for themselves. Certainly, you can think of it as like respecting the Buddha within, as well as in other people, right? The potential for awakening, which we can definitely break the precept in that respect. When we disparage ourselves or we lose faith in our ability to awaken and practice, or if we disparage other people's ability to do that, when we, stop unfolding the Dharma, stop nourishing the Sangha, the at first, some of us, anyway, have a nice honeymoon period with practice and Zen and the three treasures, and it's all lovely. But and sometimes not. Maybe initially it is a bit of a struggle. But it's certainly at a certain point, when maybe things choose to become challenging, if don't making we're not making the progress we'd like to make, or our Sangha members are not as we would like them to be, or something, then this precept really comes to the fore about the importance of like respecting the three treasures, nourishing the three treasures, because we rely on them for practice, right? So any last thoughts about, I don't know. I guess I kind of wanted to. I'm glad we did what we did, but I also almost kind of wish we'd done like we did last week and heard from people like, what has precept practice been like for you? So I think that's a very interesting topic for discussion.
Do you want people to say
that? Sure.
Oh, well, I mean, this is kind of a positive experience, I guess, because at first I didn't want to take the precepts because I was like, well, like the word vow is, I always, from a Christian background, it's like, you better not break that. You're going to promise something. And then I gradually realized, I really liked that book, Opening to Oneness, that we read. And I started realizing the precepts
come about through practice, and it's not something you impose on yourself, although I guess you probably do a little of both, but that was a really freeing concept that the practice will bring about the precepts in yourself. So just wanted to say that.
Yeah, and that kind of like I was saying, like that practice of we realize the more we recognize the emptiness of self, the more we recognize our interdependence with other beings, the more we recognize desire causes dukkha, right? All of that leads us to like, no, I don't want to, like, we don't want to break the precepts. Like, there's the kind of funny phrasing for the do not become intoxicated. We are naturally pure. There is nothing to be deluded about. This is enlightenment itself. Understand this truly, and no intoxicants can be taken in. It's an interesting way to put it. Like, it becomes impossible. Interesting thing to like, what does that really mean? Leah.
Yeah, so I think that whenever I get into groups and I do these precept classes and we talk about the precepts, I always come out feeling so much better because everybody struggles with all of it. Like everybody's got a problem with some or one or more of them. And it's just not a problem, but like, there's always, like you said, an edge to practice. Like there's always this kind of a struggle, like, and some doubt or confusion or open questions or whatever like that. And I always feel better because I forget. I come in, I think, oh, these seem so easy and everyone can do these and it's no problem. And it's like, but is it though? And then I'm reminded, and that helps. It helps me feel a lot closer to Sangha and a lot more human. And a lot more forgiving of others because I know that we're all humans and we're all struggling with these. So
So next week, we will be talking about opening the heart, specifically the four Brahma Viharas. So hope you'll be here. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Arhat.
I don't know why, but for a second I thought Scott owned a miniature ostrich, but it was just his
It's
cat's butt. I was like, where did you get a miniature? Where did you get this miniature bird from?
Yeah, miniature ostrich, did you say?
That's what I thought. Like, what?
Not quite.
The cat's butt with the tail, the wings.
Bye bye.